Now look at data transformation in MMM. So data transformation is the replacement of a variable by a function of that variable. Certain variables don't have a linear relation with sales. For example, TV GRPs usually have a core non-linear relationship with sales. There are two practical applications of data transformation, which is ad stock effect and lag effect. What is ad stock effect? Advertising ad stock is a term used for measuring the memory effect carried over from the time of first stating advertisements. Marketers can use the advertising ad stock as a variable in sales response modeling, such as regression analysis. It represents the half-life of advertisements. That means right from the starting to right now, what is the effect of the advertisement? Lag effect. A lag effect is used to represent the effect of a previous value on a lagged variable when there is some inherent ordering of the observations of this variable. This effect is useful in a study in which different subjects are given sequences of treatments and you want to investigate whether the treatment in the previous period is important to understand the outcome in the current period. So what is a lagged variable? That we identify one variable which we call as a lagged variable, and we basically take the previous value of that variable and understand what are the effects in the future. You want to understand whether the previous whatever changes or effects of the previous period are important in the current period or the outcome. Understanding the ad stock effect and the lag effect are helpful in developing a MMM model to measure the impact of spending on air. For example, ads aired on TV might be remembered for longer than those on digital modes, or a visual representation might be better than just hearing about the brand unless the tagline or the music is very catchy. Significance of S-curve transformation. So now what are those? Let's look at that. The most of marketing and activities which have non-linear impact on the KPIs and they exhibit a pattern of diminishing returns, which is the returns gradually decrease. Research has shown that the initial advertising spends will have little impact until a certain threshold, after which a noticeable on the impact on the KPIs will be observed. The impact tends to diminish as the spends reach a point of saturation. Suppose there will be a minimum effect, then this entire impact can be captured in the form of S-curve transformation. So when I talk about ROS or my click-throughs or my cost per click, then what will happen is as the value reaches the ROI or the investment, it will gradually reach a point of saturation and then it will not affect, but gradually it will just show a impact. MMM techniques, regression, which has linear and logistic. What is regression? Regression analysis is mainly used for. So MMM techniques, regression. There are two forms of regression, linear regression and logistic regression that we have discussed. So regression analysis is mainly used for causal analysis, forecasting the impact of change and forecasting trends. So cause and impact. Linear regression does not perform well on large amount of data as it is sensitive to outliers. And when I talk about linear regression, I talk about quantitative data. So you have to understand that using quantitative data would mean that a lot of outliers exist in the data, and if the outliers are not correctly cleaned, it's going to impact the regression model. Multicollinearity and cross-relation and are suitable only if businesses occur in more stable environment and are not affected by interaction among explanatory variables. Multicative regression models. To overcome the limitation inherent in linear models, Multiclative models are often preferred. These often offer a more realistic representation of reality than addictive linear models do. In these models, IDVs are multiplied together instead of added. So there are two multiclative, semi-algorithmic and algorithmic. So we know that our linear regression has a lot of problems, especially when it comes to outliers in the data. So we are going to now go to multiplicative models and learn what are semi-algorithmic and algorithmic models. Semi-algorithmic models. In log linear models, the exponents of independent variables are multiplied. Some of the benefits of log linear models are coefficients n can be interpreted as percentage in business outcome or sales to unit change in the independent variables. That means, what is the percentage of change that can occur with on the entire sales or the business outcome if it's different with a small change in the independent variables. Each independent variable in the model works on top of what has already been achieved by other drivers. Hence, they are closer to real-time scenarios because the real-time scenarios have constantly multiple variables working on top of each other. So, in a semi-algorithmic model where I take the outcome of one variable and multiply it or discuss the outcome of another variable on that, I am basically duplicating a real-time scenario. Logarithmic models. In log-log models, independent variables are also subject to logarithmic transformation in addition to the target variables. Logarithmic transformation of the target linearizes the model form, which in turn can be estimated and as addictive. So the dependent variable is logarithmically transformed. So in logarithmic, what am I doing is I'm not only applying logarithmic transformation to the target variable, I'm also doing that to the independent variables. So all the variables are basically show that logarithmic transformation. Model improvement techniques. How can I improve models in my MMM mix? Errors often arise and between predictions and actual outcome. One is bias. Bias is the difference between average predictions of your model and the actual value we are trying to predict. Models have a high bias that can lead to errors in training and testing data. So biases is your model more biased towards a certain result than the actual value that it should be predicting. And if you have a very high bias, it could mostly be because your data is biased. Variance in an error which arises from sensitivity to small changes in the training set. Models with this error perform very well on training data but high error on test data. That means if I change anything in the training set, the variance will come into effect. Bias variance trade-off. Two common pitfalls. Model can either be underfitting, where the model is unable to capture the underlying parameters, or be overfitting, where the model captures the noise along with the parameters. An underfitted model can be high bias and low variance. On the other hand, an overfitted model can be low bias and high variance. Therefore, a balance between the two with a bias variance trade-off is needed to develop an accurate model. Then, so this was the bias variance. You do not want high bias also, you do not want high variance also. But even in case of both, what is going to happen? It basically denotes that there is going to be either overfitting or underfitting, and you want to take care of that by developing a more accurate model using a trade-off between the two. Regularization of data. Through regularization, you can add a penalty term to the objective function and control the model complexity completely using the penalty term. Three MMM regression techniques: lasso regression, ridge regression, and elastic net regression. So we are just going to now how we can use these three techniques to regularize our data. We basically, like it says, we're going to introduce a penalty term to the function that controls the data model. Let's talk about lasso regression. In lasso regression, we can minimize the objective function by adding a penalty term. What is the penalty term that is added in lasso regression is the sum of the absolute values of the coefficient. This is also known as least possible deviation method. By penalizing the absolute values, the estimated coefficient shrink to zero, overfitting is avoided and the learning is faster. So what is our penalty term? We said in all the regression techniques, three we are going to discuss right now, we are going to introduce a penalty term. So in lasso regression, the penalty term is the sum of the absolute values of the coefficient. So when I penalize the absolute values, what is happening? The estimated coefficients are shrinking to zero and overfitting is avoided. Ridge regression. In ridge regression, we can try to minimize the objective function by adding a penalty term. What is the penalty term here? Sum of the squares of the coefficient. In case of multicollinearity problem among the predictor variables, the coefficient of one variable depends on the other variables included in the mode. By adding the penalty term, which is the sum of the squares of the coefficient, you're basically causing the coefficient of the collinear variables to shrink. So except for the significant predictor among them, which gives you a better model. The elastic net regression is a hybrid of ridge and lasso, combining penalties. So penalty here was sum of absolute values and here is sum of squares of coefficients. Both are working with the coefficient preferred. Obviously this is a better and preferred method and the best of the, it takes the best of both the models. Attribution modeling. Attribution modeling refers to the methods and techniques used to determine the contribution of various marketing channels or touch points in the customer journey to the desired outcomes or conversions. It aims to understand which marketing activities are or interactions influenced a customer's decision to make a desired action, such as making a purchase or submitting a lead form. So you would want to understand this to understand what can you do in the futures to get new customers or to convert prospects to business customers. Fundamentally, there are two categories of attribution models. Single touch attribution model and multi touch attribution models. This model assign credit to one single touch point in the customer journey, usually the first. So whom do I give the credit to or the attribution to? Multi touch attribution aims to assign each touch point along the customer journey with an appropriate amount of value, correlating it to its importance in the buying journey. When I say single touch attribution, that means he got converted. Maybe he directly, the influencer said something and he bought it. On a multi-touch, it would be the influencer suggested it, they went onto the website, investigated multiple things and finally bought the product. So all those touch points will be included. Single touch models, first touch, first click attribution, 100% given to first interaction. Qualified lead model, last touch, last click attribution, 100% credit given to last interaction. Lead creation, 100% credit to the point of conversion to qualified lead. Non-direct click model, 100% credit to non-direct traffic. And last, most important touch model, 100% to a single channel. Then multi-touch models are linear attribution, equal credit to all the touch points. Time decay attribution, the credit reduces from the time from the first to the last touch points. That means I will give the first touch point the highest amount of credit and then as I go towards the last, the credit will decrease. U-shaped attribution, 40% given to first and the last touch point, 20% to the rest. W-shaped, so U, so 40, 40 and 20. W-shaped, 30% to each first lead generation conversion and 10% to the rest. So 30% is because 3 points in the W and 10% to the rest. Z-shaped, 22.5% to 4 most important touch points and 10 to remaining. 22.5 because Z has 4 points, 2 at the top, 2 at the bottom. Cluster analysis. Now let's look at a clustering technique. Clustering is a technique used to segment customers or prospect into distinct group based on similarity in the attributes, behaviors or preferences. So ideally, when I talk about customer segmentation, product segmentation, I talk about one of them is, one of the techniques is clustering. Mostly clustering could either be supervised or unsupervised, but mostly it is unsupervised, which does not have the target variable or the labeled data. The goal of clustering is to identify homogeneous groups within a larger data set to better understand customer segments and market and tailor marketing strategies accordingly. It helps businesses target specific customers with personalized offering, promotions and messages, leading to more effective marketing campaign and increased customer satisfaction. Cluster analysis is an unsupervised machine learning classification technique, meaning it doesn't have predefined class definitions or expectations upfront. Cluster techniques, four techniques, major techniques that are there. Partitioning algorithms, hierarchy algorithm, density based algorithm, grid based and model based. So now let's look at these five. The most common clustering approach are partitioning and hierarchy. The main difference between the two is that partitioning look to create various partition, then evaluate them by some criteria, while hierarchy algorithm decompose or split transformation based on criteria. So in partition, I make partitions and then I evaluate by criteria. Here I basically like a hierarchy decompose based on criteria or split. K-means clustering is the most common partitioning algorithm. It is generally used when a number of classes are fixed in advance. That means I tell the system I need three classes, I need four segments, or I need five, and I can choose to define in advance. Clustering use cases, customer use case, product use case, and SEO use case. So customer use cases clustered based on customer browsing activity, customer demographic, recency, frequency, monetary value of a customer, item bite bought by a customer, and offline customer behavior. Second is, so this is product, everything based on the customer for product use case, everything based on the product. So when the product was purchased, who purchased, and in which store was a product purchase. For SEO based, keywords which you can cluster together, which is keyword rankings, difficulty score, and the authority score. Now, since we have covered clustering, now let's get into customer segmentation. A customer segment can be defined as a group of consumers who share similar characteristics and needs. By identifying and understanding different customer segments, businesses can tailor their products, services, and marketing efforts to better meet the specific needs of each segment. This can lead to more effective marketing and increase customer loyalty and better overall profitability. Very similar to clustering, I break the customer down into segments, so a group of customers with similar characteristics or needs. A non-exhaustive but most common types of customer segmentation: demographic, which is based on demographics like age, gender, or a combination; geographic, based on geographical location; psychographic, similar behaviors and interests; technographic, maybe from a particular technology or device, so more of based on technology; behavior, what kind of a behavior or shopping behavior, it could be interest behavior, all of that. So more of behavior characteristics; need-based, value-based. So what is demographic segmentation? It divides customers into groups based on major life circumstances like age, gender, income, education, and marital status. Demographic segmentation is ideal for e-commerce and fashion industries. Why? Because depending on the demographic, my fashion choices will change, my online shopping patterns will change. Geographical segmentation, it divides customers based on location, including country, state, city, and town. This segmentation is good if a business is located in at least two different places in the same town, city, state, or country, or if the company ships goods to customer in different geographical regions. Unless I have something related to geography, doing a geographical segmentation does not make sense. physiographic segmentation includes segmentation by personality, attitude, values, and interest. Use this if you offer multiple services. So you basically give the user a customized preference based on their psychographic to a particular service. Technographic examples of segmentation by technographies use mobile use, desktop use, apps, software. When technology people use is useful to know whether it's just for online marketing or for SaaS businesses that rely entirely on technology to deliver their service. So all your cloud-based kitchens and retail platforms that are online will come under this criteria. Behavioral segmentation focuses on customers' behavior in relation to the brand. Examples of customer segmentation by behavior include tendencies, frequent action, feature, or product use and habits. So everything to do with the behavior, like habits and all. Need-based example of segmentation by customers' need, including products, services, must-have, needs of specific customer group. Value-based segmentation, examples of segmentation by customer values such as economic value of specific customer groups or business. Use this if you sell products or pricing with high and low pricing. Customer segmentation benefits. How is it beneficial to me as an organization or as a brand? Improve product delivery. Boost process efficiency. Help you target content, marketing and sales outreach. Update pricing plans and strategies. Improve customer relationships. Create new offers, products and services. Improve brand awareness, stay ahead of competitors, and track product sentiment. So all of this are the benefits of customer segmentation, which we will discuss over the period of this entire marketing analytics course. Time series analysis. Now, anything that is over a period of time is a series of data points ordered in time. In a time series, time is often the independent variable, and the goal is usually to make a forecast for the future. The time series can be taken on any variable that changes over time. So your target variable has to change over a period of time for a time series analysis. A time series analysis tries to answer the question, what happens and when, and why does that happen? So data points are recorded at consistent intervals over a set period of time rather than recording the data points intermittent or randomly. See, it's since it is over a period of time, you have to, the moment I talk about time in any of the models or in any analysis, it's going to be specific time period, specific time, consistent intervals, specific interval, so that only then can I use that time series data to predict it over a period of time. Components of time series, autocorrelation. Autocorrelation is the similarity between observations as a function of the time lag between them. So the difference in time between them is the function. So that is basically, it helps you define the similarity between the observation depending on what is the time lag. So you autocorrelate them. Seasonality refers to periodic function. For example, electricity consumption is high during the day, low during the night, or online sales increase during Christmas before slowing down again. Trend. Trend is the long-term movement of the time series, such as decreasing average sales value as the product moves over towards absolutism. This is useful in predicting future movements. The term refers to trend refers to average low-term mood tendency. So how is this product going to do as a trend? What is the trend of this product? This is the term that we commonly used, so which indicates the movement of a product over a period of time. Cyclicity, repeated fluctuations around the trend that are longer in duration than in reality but shorter than to constitute itself. For example, cycling seasonal sales, cycling festival discounts, or a weekend track week. The cyclic component in a time series is a part of the movement in the variable which can be explained by other cyclic movements. So like it says, festival sales, seasonal sales, end of season sale, weekend sale, or end of the month sale. These are all fluctuations which are longer in duration, but not enough to make up a trend. Irregularity. The irregular components is the part of the movement in which, in the variable which cannot be explained by cyclic movements in the economy. In other words, there are short-term irregular fluctuations or noise, such as gap in the sampling of the pedometer, or an active team building day during the work week. So this is just irregularities that do not are too short to be cyclic, and definitely don't make up a trend. How do you model time series? So, moving average, exponential smoothing models, time series decomposition, autoregression models, autoregression integrated moving average, which is ARIMA models, then seasonal auto regressive integrated moving average models, which are S-ARIMA, vector autoregression VAR, and profit model. We will discuss all of these in detail. First, moving average. The moving average model is probably the most naive approach to time series modeling. This model simply states that the next observation is the mean of all the past observation. Although simple, this model represents a good starting point. Moving average can be used to identify interesting trends in the data. So we simply say next observation is the mean of all the past observations. So the next observation I will again add up and the mean will change. Exponential smoothing models. Data smoothing can tremendously improve the accuracy of predictions by removing the outliers from a time series data set. So, exponential smoothing, as a rule of the thumb technique for smoothing time series, uses exponential window function, whereas the simple moving average weighs historical data equally to make predictions of the future. Exponential smoothing uses exponential functions to calculate decreasing weights over time. Different types of exponential include simple exponential smoothing, double exponential, and triple, also known as Holt-Winters method. So when I talk about removing outliers, when I talk about smoothing the data, that means improving the accuracy of the data, form a time series data set, I will call it as exponential smoothing. So like a moving average will just take the average over a period of time, and it weighs everything equally in the past. The exponential smoothing, instead of directly using the moving average, uses exponential functions which includes decreasing weights. That means I add in a weight parameter or a weight variable that gradually decreases. Time series decomposition. This is a method for explicitly modeling the data as a combination of seasonal, trend, cycle, and remainder components, instead of modeling it with temporal dependencies and correlation. So I basically use, in a decomposition model, I use everything. I use a seasonal, I use trend analysis, I use cyclic movements, and all of the components to understand what are the dependencies and correlationships. More stronger. So instead of depending only on dependencies and correlation, autocorrelations. Time series regression model. Time series regression is a statistical method of forecasting future values based on historical data. The forecast variable is also called the regression dependent or explained variable, and the predictor variables are sometimes called the regressors, independent, or the explanatory variables. Predictor variables are your target variables in a time series. Regression algorithms attempt to calculate the line of best fit for a given data set, because when we talk about a regression model, we talk about the line of regression, which basically is a line going through all the data points and trying to get a best line that will have a even distribution on both the sides of the line of regression. ARIMA model, which is autoregressive integrated moving average, is a forecasting method that combines both an autoregressive model and a moving average. Like the name suggests, autoregressive integrated moving average. So it combines both of them. Autoregression uses observation from previous time set to predict future values using a regression equation. And autoregressive model utilizes a linear equation, a combination of past variable values to make forecasts. So basically, instead of just using the moving average, I use a function of the moving average to be able to predict or make forecast. On the other hand, a moving average uses linear combination of forecast errors from its prediction. Combining time series differencing with autoregression and a moving average gives a non-seasonal ARIMA model. So when I combine time series differencing with autoregression and a moving average, I'm getting a non-seasonal. So I move on down to the seasonal average, which is an extension of the ARIMA model. This is achieved by adding a linear combination of seasonal past values and forecast errors. So I take into account the forecast errors that come into the ARIMA model and I combine them with the past values and I develop a new model. Neural networks is able to approximate any continuous function sufficiently well for time series forecasting. While classical methods like ARIMA assume a linear relationship between inputs and outputs, neural networks are not bound by this constraint. I told you what neural networks are meant to do. They are able to approximate any non-linear function without prior knowledge about the properties of the data. Series neural networks such as multi-layer perception, TRON, which is MLP, offer multiple advantages that make them worth considering because they allow the input from one to be scattered to the next layer and so on till you get a more accurate result. And then we have something called as a TBATS model. So what does it stand for? Trigonometric seasonality, Box-Cox transformation, ARIMA errors, T for trend and S for seasonal components. So it becomes the TBATS model. A lot of time series contain complex and multiple seasonal patterns, hourly data containing a daily pattern, weekly pattern, annual pattern. So it could be combined with the season and the weekend parameters or couple of parameters together. So the most popular methods only account for one seasonality. So how do I take into account all these various patterns that are coming into the picture, which is your output of your ARIMA, which takes one seasonality, exponential smoothing, which again takes one seasonality. So I have to now combine a lot of parameters together. TBATS model can deal with complex seasonality, non-integer seasonality, non-nested seasonality, and a large period seasonality with no seasonality constraints, making it possible to create detailed long-term forecast. This is also a drawback to using that they can be slow while calculating prediction, especially when with long time series. So it can be slow while making prediction because it is taking so many parameters into consideration, which is a drawback to the TBATS model. We've discussed the acronym. So other than giving a more complex seasonality and a more complex model which is, has more accuracy, you might be worried about the time it is taking for the predictions. So we now come to an important part, which is the market basket analysis. So what is market basket? Is with the items in my basket, what are the other items that are probable to be buy, which we see on almost everywhere, that buy this product along with this product, or this has been frequently bought. That is called a market basket analysis. So market basket analysis is a technique used in data mining and machine learning to analyze the relation between items and the items that are frequently purchased together in transaction. It helps businesses understand customer behavior, identify patterns and make informed decisions such as product placement, cross-selling, even upselling for that matter, and personalized recommendations. Market basket analysis basically uses association analysis. Association analysis, what does it do? It discovers the association rules. So association analysis is based on a threshold called a support and confidence to pinpoint the association rule. The support threshold defines the frequency of items occurring together in transactional databases. Confidence threshold is the conditional probability that an item appears in a transaction when another item appears. The association analysis is commonly used for market basket analysis. So we have a support threshold and a confidence threshold. What does the support threshold do? Is what is the frequency of the item occurring together, and the confidence threshold works on the condition that condition probability that both these items will appear to that if one item appears, then the other item will appear. Sequence pattern mining focuses on finding frequent sequences of items in a transactional database. Unlike association rule mining, sequence pattern mining takes the order of items into account and revealing temporal patterns. So I find what is the sequence of buying the products. Example, consider an online shopping platform transaction data. The sequence are extracted, pros products add to cart, checkout support 5%, confidence 80%. This sequence pattern indicates that 5% of users who browse the product eventually add them to items to the cart, and 80% confidence that they will complete the checkout process. Again, a combination of both is what we are looking at. Both association rule mining and sequence pattern mining play crucial roles in understanding customer behavior and optimizing business strategies. Types of market basket analysis, so descriptive, predictive, and differential. What are they? Descriptive uses item frequency analysis, identifying the most frequently purchased item. Association relationship between items that are frequently purchased together. Item core occurrence analysis, simultaneous occurrence of items in a transaction. Predictive uses collaborative filtering, recommending products based on similar customer behavior. Basket prediction, predicting the likelihood of a customer purchasing a specific item based on their past behavior. Market basket with machine learning uses algorithm to make prediction based on the transaction data. So predictive, like it suggests, it predicts. So basically it uses the historical data to purchase the, to basically tell you the future. Now let's get on to differential market basket analysis. So we finished discussing descriptive, predictive. Now we talk about differential. So focuses on analyzing changes or differences in customer behavior over a period and across different segments. It uses multiple analysis. So first is temporal analysis, which is identifying how purchases patterns change over a period of time, seasons, holiday, weekends, weekdays, beginning of month, end of month, and all of those. Segment-based analysis, comparing the behavior of different customer segments, that is new customer versus returning customer, or Gen Z customers versus Gen X customers. A-B testing, conducting, so segment-based analysis is pretty clear, conducting experiments to compare the impact of different strategies, so strategy A versus strategy B, on customer behavior.